Peter R. Breggin, M.D., is called the conscience of psychiatry for his many decades of successful reform efforts. His scientific and educational work provide the foundation for modern criticism of drugs and ECT and lead the way in promoting more caring and effective therapies. His books include Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, Medication Madness, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, and now Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, Understanding and Overcoming Negative Emotions. Welcome to the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour.
And welcome, welcome, my wonderful audience. Every week I like to remind you how happy it makes me to be communicating with you. It's a treat for me every week to think about the folks who tune in, or the many more who listen on the archives, and who meet me at conferences and tell me how much the radio show means to me, or leave me little messages on my office answering machine. The show is a great pleasure for me. It gives me a chance to visit with people I ordinarily wouldn't necessarily visit with, because, you know, it's 50 folks a year. Who has time in this day and age when we email and text and tweet and whatever else, instead of just sitting down and talking like I do on this show? So I'm just so glad you give me this opportunity. I'm so glad that I'm able to give this opportunity and share it with you. I want to also thank all of you who are just raising my website to a higher and higher profile. We've been getting around 10,000 visits a day lately. That dwarfs what it was a year or two ago. People are really enjoying my frequent alerts. And this is drawing in a lot of new people and old friends. My Michelle Carter blog about the girl who supposedly texted her boyfriend to death by supposedly commanding him to, as it turned out, on the phone, maybe not ever, telling him to back in his truck and kill himself. And the true story of Michelle Carter, who is really a martyr to how we abuse our youth and young adults today. She really is a martyr. And my resource centers, the three free ones that are set up as resource centers, and then the many other free resources available throughout the website. And don't forget, November 10th through 12th, I'm going to be in Columbus, Ohio. I'm co-sponsoring a conference that once, over the years and years ago, has been running a long time, was a nutritional conference. Now it's informed medical decision making. And I've been co-sponsoring now for my second year in a row. And as part of that, I'm going to be speaking twice. And Peter Gerze from Denmark, I think the most exciting new addition into the field of medical reform and psychiatric reform. He's spread into great wings to fly over the rubble of psychiatry and report on it and analyze it and give us hope for better things. Peter Gerze will be there doing two talks. And a friend of mine, Jeannie Stolzer, will be there talking about relationship from newborn for the rest of our lives. So that's going to be a lot of fun. It's November 10th through 12th in Columbus, Ohio. You can get to it by going to Breggin.com, my website, and checking out the upcoming events. Right now, this is the upcoming event. I'm not doing a lot of them like I used to. I'm being very selective in the upcoming events that I do. And speaking of being selective, today we have a really, really great guest. Been on the show a year ago, Patrick Hahn. Are you there, Patrick?
Yes, I am.
Good. You always have such a great voice on the radio. I just love how you come across. It just speaks of authority and truth and good
values. Yes, well, I use my voice for a living.
Well, maybe you could tell us more about that. I'm more familiar with your writing. Patrick is a professor, affiliate professor of biology at Loyola University in my old state of Maryland. He's a freelance writer. He has appeared on Biology Online, Loyola Magazine, Popular Archaeology. All this gives you a sense of the breadth of his interests, Baltimore Sun. And on the Health Rangers website, which is, what is it called? Health News?
Natural News.
He and I both write on that, both bloggers on that site, and he's got great blogs and expressing a wide range of interests, and has written the best blog about the Michelle Carter case, other than my own blogs, but it's right up there with my blogs, and it's just a pleasure to have somebody else writing the truth about the Michelle Carter situation. So I'm very pleased that he's been doing that. And as I was looking over Patrick Hahn's interests, his last name spelled Hahn, H-A-H-N. You'll find him easily if you just put in Patrick Hahn blogger. His interests have dovetailed for a long time with mine, and in many ways have been more expansive, but I'm expanding more into new areas, as you all know who listen, and much more into nutrition now, as well as psychiatry. But nowadays I suggest a new nutritional approach for all the patients who come to me, whether they're on psychiatric drugs and want to come off them, or just want to build a better mental life and spiritual life and for themselves. I thought that a good theme for us, which has just been going through my mind so much lately, is the industrializing of our country, and especially the raising of our children, but also from pre-birth to death, this industrializing of everything we do, which means that most of what we're learning to do, we're learning from industries, their advertisements and propaganda, and their influence on the major media. And I'm not going to say much about introducing that theme, but I'll be interjecting it, that everywhere we look, we cannot trust what we're being told about our health and well-being and education and politics, because it is all filtered through or produced by huge industrial powers, whether it's food, the dairy industry, the beef industry, the food processing industry, or whether it's the drug manufacturing industry and its peons in the medical and psychiatric industry, whether it's the infant formula interest. I mean, it's just everywhere. So let me just leave you with that thought and now go and see where my most interesting guest, Patrick Hahn, is going in his current thoughts. Take over for a bit and rest my voice.
I've been busy. I've taught at 5 different colleges and universities this past year. That keeps me busy. But I'm also busy with my avocation, which is investigating the pharmaceutical industry, and particularly the psychopharmaceutical industry. So I was on here a year ago, and I likened the experience to falling down a rabbit hole. And I'm here today to say it just keeps getting curiouser and curiouser. So I write about the iatrogenic cascade. People go to doctors with usually nothing more than the problems of living, and they get a psychiatric diagnosis, and they get prescribed some kind of psychiatric medication, and they have a bad reaction to it, which is bad reactions, which are well-documented toxic effects of the drugs. And instead of taking them off the drug, they usually give them more drugs, stronger drugs, higher doses, and somebody who had nothing more than the problems of living ends up a career mental patient and or totally disabled. And most of these people began taking these drugs for just the most banal reasons you could imagine. They were nervous about their upcoming exams. They're having trouble in their relationship with their girlfriend. That last one is kind of ironic, given that one of the most reliable effects of antidepressants is sexual dysfunction. In fact, if they were honest, they'd probably call these sexual dysfunction pills with relieving depression an occasional and transient side effect. But yeah, now according to the World Health Organization, depression is the world's leading cause of disability for adults between 15 and 43. That is staggering. These are supposed to be the prime years of life. And what makes it really staggering is that we're now consuming antidepressants in record amounts. And when a treatment is 100% effective, the index condition should disappear as smallpox disappeared after the introduction of the smallpox vaccine. And that's clearly not what's going on here.
Now, the data is very clear that it's just worse for kids, for example, to be on antidepressants than not to be. Yeah. Got a lot of new information on that, folks, on my frequent alert and on the resource center I call 123 antidepressants. It's really quite bizarre.
If this were anything other than a manufactured epidemic, you'd think medical researchers would be moving heaven and earth to figure out what is causing it, but they're not. I've been reading about the great cholera of the early 19th century. The authorities didn't know what was causing this, but they were moving heaven and earth to find out. They put some of the best scientific minds of the day to work on the problem. And eventually they figured it out. It's this thing in the water. And the water may look and smell and taste perfectly okay. But if you've got this thing swimming around your water, it's going to kill you. And they didn't want that. These guys may have been patriarchal or Eurocentric or classist or whatever, but they wanted people to be alive and productive. And there was some resistance among the water companies to updating their infrastructure, but not a whole lot. They didn't want to kill their customers either. And today, why aren't they making a similar effort to find out why people are so depressed?
Well, of course, a lot of the idea that they are depressed is manufactured by the companies that want to sell the drugs. But you're so right about the epidemic. You know, I work in a university town where we have Cornell and we have Ithaca College, which is a very good school, I think, in a lot of ways. And I see these young men who come in and who are on antidepressants and concerned about maybe they've just learned about the sexual dysfunction they're having isn't because of anything in their minds or in their own normal bodies, but it's being caused by the antidepressant that probably the Cornell medical people put him on. And the fear that this engenders and the shame this engenders, and I mean, it's catastrophic for young men and women to experience sexual dysfunction and then to fear, because it can become permanent, to fear the worst outcome. And you're right, if there was anything but I don't know if it's reached $1 trillion industry yet, these multi-billion dollar industries.
It's in the billions.
They don't want anybody to notice this. And they just want to keep on doing the drugging. You can't be too cynical about industrialized society. And, you know, I'm a person who for years has been fundamentally a libertarian who believes in the free market. The problem is markets don't stay free. On the one hand, they engage the government. On the other hand, they collude with each other. Industry and government go hand in hand to lie and cheat and steal. So yes. We're constantly dealing with these terrible problems of human avarice, greed, and corruption. And when you have big government and industrial powers, it's overwhelming. And it comes down to these individual human beings coming into my office, children beating up on their parents and totally out of control. And it actually all began after they were put on stimulants for what? Not paying attention in class. It's a dreadful situation, this industrialization of everything that's near and dear to us, really.
Yeah, I looked into antipsychotics and foster children with an emphasis on Maryland, but it's a problem nationwide. I talked to a young fellow, Dam Lee, and he was taken into foster care when he was 14. And one day he threatened to commit suicide. He said to me, I wasn't serious. What teenager doesn't say things like that? But they took him seriously enough. And so they hospitalized him, gave him antidepressants, which kicked him into a full-blown mania. And then he was re-hospitalized for 6 months. They put him on Risperdal, lithium, and Depakote. And for the next 5 years, he was in a semi-comatose state, falling asleep in his classes. And he's quite angry about his experiences, understandably enough. He says, we're teenagers. We're kids. We're already stuck by being in the system. Why would you want to make it worse? And at 19, tests indicated elevated levels of liver enzymes and thyroid hormones, which are well-known toxic effects of the drugs he was given. And so they said, well, okay, we guess you don't need to be taking them after all. And he was tapered off with medical assistance. And it's like, why didn't they do that years before? So he was, he spent the next 10 years just kind of drifting. He said he went through half a dozen colleges and universities without taking a degree. When I talked to him, he was 29. There's a sort of a happy ending here. He seemed finally, at the age of 29, to have gotten his life on track. And he's working as an instructional assistant at a school and a restaurant host. And he's also working on a master's degree in administration at organizational leadership at Hopkins. And he says he wants to work in the foster care industry and hopefully try to reform it. But he's not going to get back all those years he lost.
Patrick, it reminds me of one of the saddest experiences I ever had. As a professional, I don't think I've ever talked about this on the air. When I was in Washington, D.C., a very famous hospital called me and asked me if I would do a grand rounds for them on a patient who had been psychotic for over a decade. He was in his late 20s. And they sent me like a little write-up on him. And I don't know whether they were just, you know, wanting to hear what I had to say, or whether there was somebody there wanted to set me up, show that Bregan didn't have any solutions for their chronic patients, that of whom they had a great number. Without mentioning the name of the hospital, well, I will. It was Chestnut Lodge, which was once famous for treating people with psychotherapy, but probably for financial reasons, had begun to treat people with drugs most of the time.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I can't do a grand rounds based on your clinical description of this person. I need to read all this person's records. You send me every bit of records you have. Get permission from the family, and I'll look at this. So I go back and I look, and the boy is 18 years old. He's having some sort of an anxiety problem, not a very serious problem, but it lands him in the local general psychiatric unit, not at Chestnut Lodge. And he's doing quite well, and all of a sudden he has a psychotic break in the middle of the brief hospitalization.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, everybody says, oh, look, we're so glad he got here just before this break, which was obviously going to happen. Well, I looked at it, and the break took place within a day or two after being started on one of the older antidepressants. I think it was amitriptyline, Elavil.
Yeah.
And so then I tracked his story for 10 years, during which time he was given multiple antipsychotic drugs, multiple antidepressant drugs, multiple this and that. But the one consistent theme was they never took him off his Elavil, never took him off his old antidepressant. Yeah. That if you look at the record, you'd see made him crazy. So I came to the grand rounds. I thought, God, this is going to be so great. And I explained to everybody what had happened. And I thought they were going to physically attack me. They were not eager for this information.
Yeah.
And I think they completely rejected everything I was saying about the course, and yet I laid it right out there, had all the data. So it is this bad, folks. It's this bad. We're destroying children, youth. We're destroying older people, and we're really destroying the people in my age group, the so-called elderly. So, and it's a huge tragedy, and we're going to need the alternative press, people like Patrick Hahn and my listeners, to be blogging and writing and talking to their families and refusing to go along with the drugging of their children or their parents or their grandparents and so on, because the profession just balkanizes. It just surrounds itself, draws the wagons around the whole medical psychiatric profession when they're criticized. It's something that, Patrick, you've also written another blog about in theme today of the industrializing of everything that happens in our lives today.
Yeah, well, I was investigating antipsychotic prescriptions for Maryland foster children and foster children in general. So here in Maryland, 14% of foster children are given antipsychotics, as opposed to 2% of other Medicaid children and 1% of children in private care. And they even give these drugs to preschoolers. So 2% of Maryland foster children under the age of 5 are given these drugs. And that's 20 times the rate of other children covered by Medicaid. And there was a report, this was a 2012 report. And another 2012 report by the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality was on 16 states, not including Maryland. But they found that these drugs consistently are prescribed in a way that violate their own guidelines. Too many, too high a dose, too long to patients who are too young. There's thousands of children are being given 4 or more antipsychotic nationwide. Thousands of children are being given 4 or more antipsychotic drugs concurrently. How can any human being possibly need that much medication?
And how can they even survive that kind of medication? The antipsychotics.
Yeah, these drugs.
Yeah, go ahead.
They cross the blood-brain barrier. They kill nerve cells, they cause shrinkage of the brain, and they cause tardive dyskinesia, which of course is just a terrible, disfiguring, socially isolating disorder. The use of these drugs is correlated with a drop in life expectancy that's measured not in years, but in decades. And yet the literature still touts these drugs for their neuroprotective effect.
That's in a Petri dish, folks. They get weird findings in their Petri dishes and claim it's protecting the brain cells.
Well, I talked to one of your professional colleagues, David Healy. Like you, he is an outspoken critic of the pharmaceutical industry. And like you, he has been enormously helpful to me in this journey. And I asked him if these antipsychotic drugs have a neuroprotective effect. And here's his exact words to me. That is a complete myth. I know of absolutely no evidence for this. What we do know is that antipsychotics caused tardive dyskinesia. Everyone agrees that they do. Everyone has agreed this for half a century. This is brain damage. Tardive dyskinesia stems from brain damage.
Let's take a minute and just tell people a little more what tardive dyskinesia is.
Yeah, it's uncontrollable movements, lip smacking, grimacing, blinking, movements of the hands, arms, writhing of the torso. I mean, the cruel cartoon stereotype of the mentally ill in these bizarre postures with their tongues lolling out and so forth, sadly, that's not false. But it's not an effect of mental illness. It's an effect of the drugs.
And it has mental components too, folks. Some forms of it are like torture. That's tardive akathisia, where you feel driven to move about like you're being tortured from the inside out. Sometimes you can get spasms of the neck. They're quite common. That's tardive dystonia. And they can be horribly painful and disfiguring and crippling. They affect the mind in ways that are dementing. That is, you really find that people who have these cases over time often, if not always, show signs of loss of some of their cognitive abilities, thinking and so on. So, this is a disaster which is being completely ignored in the press. It's even hard for me to get lawyers to pay attention to it, although the cases are often million-dollar settlements or million-dollar or more courtroom victories. And again, this is, why would anybody be on four or five drugs at once? Why would anybody ever be on antipsychotics, which, by the way, have not been proven effective for what they are touted for, which is helping people with acute psychoses? There's no research to show they're effective. This is bizarre. Peter Gartza and others have been publishing studies of this, and I've been talking about this for decades. All they can do is subdue a person temporarily and then make them worse because they're so neurotoxic.
So, just a couple of days before I published that article, Thomas Moore of the Institute for Safe Medication Practices, he's a fellow who blew the whistle on Chantix, suicides in Chantix they were covering up. And coincidentally, this came out just as I was completing my article, and I'd like to quote this, if I may. Antipsychotic drugs impair multiple body systems, including the extrapyramidal motor system. That's what causes, when you damage that, that's what causes tardive dyskinesia. Glycemic metabolism, vascular control, and sexual function. When the beneficial effects on psychosis are measured, the mean improvements in psychosis are minimal and rarely sustained over time. The findings of substantial harm are robust and seen in studies of short and long duration with first and second generation agents and with rigid protocols and those providing treatment flexibility. I'd also like to add, last year, a Philadelphia jury awarded $70 million to a boy who grew breasts after taking Janssen's blockbuster antipsychotic drug Risperdal.
Imagine being a little boy and you're 10 years old and you have large breasts. And Sometimes, even after the drug is stopped, the breasts don't get reduced because they develop fibrous tissue. And even after surgery, the fibrous tissue can tend to return.
Oh,
we're
God.
Talking about a disaster for a boy. And I believe this same thing has to be happening to girls, but isn't being picked up. They just think, oh, you know, they matured early.
Well, that's, and the tardive dyskinesia doesn't always go away, even when you stop the drug.
It usually doesn't go away.
Yeah.
Once it persists for a month or so, it's not going anywhere in most cases.
Yeah. But this hasn't stopped these drugs from becoming the most profitable class of drugs in America. Between 2013 and 2014, Abilify became the single highest grossing drug in America, $7.5 billion in sales.
You can find, my great listening audience, you can find a lot of data on this by going to Patrick Hahn and looking at his blogs or my blogs, but also my free resource center and you on these drugs, and it's so easy to get to, you know, www.123antipsychotics.com. It's
antipsychotics.com.
Go ahead.
Oh yeah, they're trying to get even more kids on these drugs. Last fall I attended youth mental health first aid training at a local public school. That was an eye-opening experience. So this is sponsored by the National Council for Behavioral Health, and it's supposed to enable teachers, parents, and others in contact with youth to identify mental illnesses to facilitate early detection and treatment by our mental health care system. And my fellow attendees were surprisingly open about their experience with that system. One of them mentioned that her son became manic after being diagnosed with ADHD. Another said both she and her roommate became bipolar after being diagnosed with depression. And neither our facilitator nor anybody else pointed out that mania and bipolar disorder are well-documented toxic effects of the drugs given for ADHD and depression. And our training manual didn't mention that either, although it did say that depression is caused by a deficiency of serotonin, and that's a fable which by now has become as discredited as the phlogiston theory of chemistry. And it also told us mental health interventions are evidence-based and scientifically tested. But they didn't mention that most of that evidence is manufactured by the drug companies who have a fiduciary duty to sell as many drugs as possible.
I'm looking at these folks online. I've not heard of them before. They're a government group, it looks like.
I don't think so. Because I was looking at their annual report, the National Council for Behavioral Health, titled "A Legacy
a 501c3.
Of Excellence and Impact." Nice yeah. little job of patting themselves on their on the back. And their sponsors include Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America, along with 12 different drug companies.
Yeah.
And those 12 include AstraZeneca, Bristol-Myers Squibb, Eli Lilly, Janssen, which makes Risperdal, and Novartis. And within just the last 10 years, each of these companies, or in the case of Janssen, its parent company, Johnson & Johnson, has paid out hundreds of millions of dollars to settle claims of illegal marketing, some cases including illegal marketing of antipsychotic drugs to children. If an individual with this record of lawlessness came to your home to fix your sink trap, would you open the door?
That's really good. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I talked to another one of your professional colleagues, Dr. Joanna Moncrief.
And She's been on the show numerous times.
Oh, she has. Oh, good. Yeah. She said
Great
the task
Britain. Of... She's the lady from Great Britain, folks.
Yes. The task of childhood is to teach children to handle difficult emotions. We need to help children learn techniques to manage their emotions, not squash them with drugs. You don't hear that kind of sentiment much these days. Today, toddlers who throw temper tantrums are diagnosed with bipolar disorder and prescribed major tranquilizers, a process that Dr. Healy has likened to giving cancer chemotherapy to a child with a cold.
It is. You know, we treat the brain like, oh, this is it. This is the final metaphor. We treat the brain as if it's a cancer to mm-hmm. be killed off with psychiatric neurotoxins. That's what we do, folks.
Yeah. Yeah, I was, earlier this year, the NPR show On Point had a program on depression and teen girls. And a young woman called, talk about how she has been struggling with depression since she was 16. She's been under the care of the psychiatric profession for 9 years. So I guess she'd be about 25 now, and hasn't cured her depression, by the way. But this is what she had to say, and I quote, "I've had friends who've had parents who say, you just need to pick yourself up. Just get over it. And you can't. It's not possible." And I heard that and I thought, my God, what a pernicious message. Life is all about acquiring the inner and external resources to cope with adversity. But what I found most appalling was the quiet certitude with which she uttered these words, like a good little girl reciting her catechism.
Yeah, it's very, very sad to see this. And I see it sometimes in the kids who come in to see me, but usually their parents have already decided they want their children off drugs, and that's why they come to see me. But it's very sad to see the moral crippling of our children by diagnosing and drugging them. The diagnosis itself does it. But then telling the kids that they have a disease and they're not to blame and my parents aren't to blame and nobody can do anything about it, but we have medications. It's the ruination of a child. Children need to be told you and your parents can work out your problems. And what I do in my work, Patrick, is I bring together families. I don't treat children by themselves ever. Mm-hmm. Bring together families and help the parents and the children work together with each other to improve their family life. And with that, lo and behold, the children rapidly recover because they're still of the age where when their parents change, their life gets infinitely better when their parents improve and how they relate to them. It's all backward. Industrialized America has us treating our children backward.
Yeah, well, now it's one out of 13 American children between the ages of 6 and 17 have taken a psychotropic drug within the last 6 months. And how's that working out for us? Youth suicide rates are at their highest, going back at least as far as 1999. The number of children receiving disability benefits for mental illness is at an all-time high. Does anybody think the problem is we aren't drugging enough kids? We now live in a society in which children are exploited as consumers of psychiatric medication, of nutritionally barren junk food, of manufactured entertainment, just as ruthlessly as they once were exploited for their labor.
Yes. And they're being turned into people who will be so ineffective as they grow up in managing their lives because of this destruction of the concept of taking charge of themselves and learning to take charge of themselves, and that parents are here to teach kids to handle their toughest emotions and to take charge of their lives and to grow up. That's what education and child rearing should be all about, and growing up. It's about learning to take charge of yourself as a responsible, free human being. God, we don't do any of that hardly anymore in our schools and our families.
Yeah. Well, I saw when 48 Hours did that documentary on the Michelle Carter case, after they devoted all of 36 seconds to your testimony, then they brought in Dr. Harold Koplowitz to assure viewers that antidepressants are safe. And Koplowitz is one of the 22 authors of GlaxoSmithKline's Study 329 of Paxil, which said that the drug was safe and effective for major depression in children, even though their own data showed no difference between the drug and placebo for any of 8 original outcome variables they specified. And more than 1 out of 8 the children given Paxil experienced self-harm or suicidality, as opposed to 1 out of 40 given placebo. Ineffective and dangerous. That's not a real winning combination. So here is, you know, after, as I said, they devoted 36 seconds to your testimony, then they brought on the author of a totally discredited study on antidepressants to assure us that antidepressants are safe. What's wrong with this picture?
Yeah, and 48 Hours was in touch with me on several occasions during the trial and as the trial came to the end. And then they called me when the trial was over and said they'd get in touch with me later. They were just going to do a short little thing. And then they did their one-hour show. They didn't even have the courage to tell me they were doing an hour show and were going to leave me out of it. But they certainly knew who I was. They certainly heard and saw a lot of my testimony. So it's very purposeful. 2020, on the other hand, invited me down to New York City and interviewed me. And I do think I affected a lot of the orientation of the show, which was more balanced. And they had me on about 4 times for, you know, these short clips. But they also had other people giving voice to things that I had told them were true. So that was a big, big exception.
Oh, I haven't seen that. I'm going to have to go watch that.
Yeah, that was an improvement. Ever since the direct-to-consumer advertising, it's been practically impossible to get a critical view of drugs on the air because the media is now supported by direct-to-consumer advertising for psychiatric and all other drugs.
Yeah.
And if you attack a psychiatric drug, believe me, it's put out by somebody who's, if they're not advertising that particular drug on the network, they're advertising some other drug on the network.
Yeah.
And so it's really reduced to rubble what used to be is a somewhat more robust discussions. In fact, I used to get more time on 2020 and all the big shows, the morning shows and the evening news shows and so on, than the whole combined group of us now get. And that's because of, even though our group has grown so much bigger and stronger with so many more people than me, including folks like yourself and Peter Gerza and Joanna Moncrief, whom you mentioned. The major media is just really shut down around the defense of their one of their two or three largest supporters in the pharmaceutical industry, maybe even the largest. I don't know if it's bigger than the cars, the companies that are always advertising, but it's got to be right up there near the top.
Well, I did a little more digging on Dr. Koplowitz. He had a book out in 1996 with the title, It's Nobody's Fault, New Hope and Help for Difficult Children. And in the foreword, he tells his readers, until 20 years ago, there was a general belief that early childhood traumas and inadequate parenting were responsible for childhood psychiatric disorders. The fact is, when a child has a brain disorder, it is not the parent's fault. A brain disorder is the result of what I call DNA roulette. In the same way a child comes into the world with large ears, a tendency to go gray in his late 20s, or beautiful hazel eyes and deep dimples, a child is born with a brain that functions in a particular way because of its chemical composition. And then in italics it follows, it is brain chemistry that is responsible for brain disorders, not bad parenting. And he states over and over in the book that these conditions called mental illness are caused by a chemical imbalance in the brain. And but as luck would have it, Dr. Koplowitz has just the right pills to balance those chemicals. And he goes on to tell the story of Margaret, who at the age of 7 was completely miserable, whose parents were told she needed full-day special education and would never succeed in anything. But today, after having her brain chemicals balanced with the aid of Ritalin, Margaret now makes straight A's, plays the French horn in the school band, and has lots of friends. And the book is just peppered with breezy little anecdotes like this. These parents were at their wits' end until finally they discovered Dr. Koplowitz, whose pills transformed all these children into well-behaved little superachievers. So apparently, none of Koplowitz's patients ever suffer from worsening depression, tardive dyskinesia, self-harm, suicidality, or any of the other devastating and well-documented toxic effects of these drugs.
Well, and folks, as every therapist knows from personal experience and as the scientific literature shows, one of the most common elements in severely distressed human beings, whether you diagnose them schizophrenic or bipolar or whatever, distressed human beings, is child abuse. And one of the things we do as therapists is help people come to grips with child abuse when they're adults. And what I do with families when these issues come up is to let the parents, air their guilt and shame and promise their children they will never behave that way again. And we work it out. When parents are responsible people who, for their own reasons, often psychiatric drugs, lost it with their children. And often street drugs as well. Any psychoactive substance will increase a parent's difficulty with self-control and maintaining ethics. It's just such a shame. But see, there's no big industry to support research and to publicize research saying We must improve family life, and we must do it on a wide scale. We've got to find a way to keep mothers at home when they want to be at home. Most mothers want to be at home, but they feel they can't be for economic reasons, and sometimes because they're shamed into thinking raising their children isn't worthwhile enough. Mm-hmm. We need ways to have mothers at home with their kids and to have fathers staying with their families and taking care of their children. I mean, that's what the issues surround. And I believe nursing is often a critical factor, the intimacy of nursing and the proper nutrition in the raising of children. There are studies showing huge benefits to the parent, the nursing mother, emotional benefits to her and to the child of that relationship. I mean, we have so much research on the importance of family, good emotional nutrition, and good food nutrition in the raising of our kids. But that is not where any of the industries are. In fact, you know, as I've been talking about, so you probably don't know about this, Patrick, but I've been talking about nutrition on the show, and we have this joint conference I'm doing with, I think, the best nutritionist in the world, Pam Popper. And there's just no doubt about the research on the importance of good nutrition, and it's inexpensive. Eating the proper foods, like potatoes and rice and vegetables, the mainstays of life that we've eaten for millions of years as mammals, is actually much less expensive than eating dairy and milk is very expensive. Eating eggs, eating meat filled with hormones, and so on. That's not good for the profits of industry. So much of what goes on here is industry latching onto something to sell us, then doing everything in its power to disregard the toxicity of the foods, the toxicity of the drugs, and so on. But I'm so glad you're here doing so much. We're talking with Patrick Hahn, H-A-H-N. So good you're here, Patrick, talking about all this stuff.
Yeah, here's another article. This was in Salon Magazine interviewing Dr. Koplowitz, and he repeats the same theme. He says, psychiatric illness is not caused by bad parenting. It's not that your mother got divorced or that your father didn't wipe you the right way. It really is DNA roulette. You know, as a reporter, I have talked to people who were sexually abused as children and who today suffer from these conditions called mental illness. And I cannot imagine how you can get to a place where you can dismiss the suffering of another human being with that kind of sneering remark. It's not that your father didn't wipe you the right way. Good God.
Well, the way you get there is it brings you enormous wealth and power. Koplowitz, it's interesting to be talking about him. I wrote about him years ago and kind of lost track of him. But many years ago when Bill Clinton was president, Hillary held the first mental health conference ever in the White House, and guess who was her chief psychiatrist for that conference? It was Koplowitz.
Friends in high places.
Yeah,
here's
this will
an
get
article.
You money and industry and all kinds of support from the government and everything else. Whereas calling for the improvement of family life in America isn't going to get you anywhere. In fact, a lot of politics benefits from the destruction of the American family life.
Here's an article in the New York Times, had a profile of Dr. Koplowitz, which oddly enough did not run in the health section. It ran in fashion and style. And here are these quotes of his colleagues. Harold really portrayed him as this saintly figure devoted to healing sick children. Harold really wants to do something meaningful for children, which is kind of an amazing thing. Another one says, I see Harold as an entirely decent, honorable, honest human being. And his chairwoman of the board says, Harold could make so much more money in private practice. He does this because he believes in it. I mean, this is our paper of record. This sounds like the kind of news release I would expect to be coming out of North Korea about their dear leader.
That's a nice comparison.
Yeah, yeah, I was wondering how you get to be so well connected. You get an article like that.
They wildly defend the pharmaceutical industry. Their coverage of the case of Michelle Carter was, you'd barely know I was the only scientific and medical expert in the entire trial.
Yeah.
And that I was talking not just about psychiatric drugs, but the abusive relationships that Michelle had with the young man who killed himself. He was very abusive of her, and how he was abused by his father, who beat him up a few months before he committed suicide. I mean, which is so relevant to what you're saying about, you know, let's exonerate the drugs and not mention that both these youngsters, Michelle and Conrad Roy, her boyfriend of sorts, were going through abuse. Michelle from Conrad and Conrad from his father and maybe other members of his family. I discussed all that in the Michelle Carter blog. We're down to about a minute. Do you have some eloquent thoughts to leave us with, Patrick Hahn?
Well, yeah, we're kind of outgunned here. Saying how Koplowitz raised $142 million for his Child Mind Institute. I wish I had that kind of financial backing, but I don't. But I think the thing to do is to enjoy the fight. And history will record Peter Bregan was on the right side long after the likes of Harold Koplowitz are consigned to the ash bin of history.
That's a good thought, but it may be that history is really the lottery, not our genetics. And I don't know who's going to triumph at what period of history, which I've begun to realize our lives are such a tiny, tiny, tiny blip in. But I love your enthusiasm for the work and for the fight. And I so much appreciate your support of what I've been doing. And thank you so much for being on the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour. And folks, the music will start soon, letting us know that it's goodbye for another week. And please check out Bregan.com and add to those 10,000 visits a day I'm getting now. You're much, much appreciated.